prepared to be engaged and or enraged. Either way, it's going to be pretty dang entertaining. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Right. You're bloody well right. You got a bloody right to say. Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
I mean, I show up happy. It's like everybody thinks there's something wrong.
I know.
I'm just going to go back. I'm going to go back to being the same old bitchy Blair, if that's what it's going to take.
There's a fine line between the happy and the bitchy Blair.
I never seem to find it. This is Primetime Sports for Wednesday, July 27th. I am Jeff Blair. I'm in a great mood today. John Shannon, my co-host, is in a great mood today.
I am. I'm always in a good mood, aren't I?
Yeah, you are. You are in a good mood. But
it's still hockey season. Unbelievable, isn't
it's
it?
It's always hockey season. I mean, I come in and I got hockey, baseball. Hockey.
I think Ricky Romero would be happy if there was more hockey.
I was going to say, I think right about now, Ricky Romero would be just thrilled. Do you think they're making him walk back from Boston? Because walk is one thing he... there's a line in there about walks, but...
What is it, 81 pitches in the first three innings? That was scary.
Yeah, 6 runs in the first inning, 9 outs, 6 walks. We're in a crisis situation here. I mean, it's a full-blown pitching crisis.
The sky is falling?
The sky is falling.
Okay.
There's no doubt about it. The sky is falling. It's not necessarily falling for Ralph Krueger, though. The new head coach of the Edmonton Oilers. Good Winnipegger. Good Winnipeg boy. That's supposed to be a lead in for something.
I tell you what, it's... This is an interesting hire when you consider that Krueger was with Rennie last year. And I do think the question has to be asked, how much different will it be? I the other question that people are saying, well, why didn't, if it was Krueger, why not do it right away? And I do think the Oilers did it right with, I'm not a lawyer, but the due diligence of going through the process and trying to figure out who was the right guy and going through the World Championships and watching Brent Sutter and talking to Todd Nelson, their American League coach in Oklahoma City. The other key thing, it had to happen now because free agency's coming. They've got a chance at Justin Schultz. They have an opportunity to tell everybody, okay, this is our head coach and Ralph Krueger's our guy.
Yeah, and when you're going to be making decisions like that, it really does help to have the guy in place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and because at the end, there's going to be something that the agent or the player asks a question, and the coach better have an answer, because the manager doesn't necessarily have the answer.
Well, Ralph Krueger is the new head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, and he joins us in Primetime Sports. Hello, Ralph.
Hi, how are you?
We're very good. First of all, congratulations on the
gig. Thank you very much.
John Shannon was just talking about the process the Oilers went through and you know, how it was important that they did their due diligence and that they spoke to guys. I'm just wondering, from your point of view as a guy who was with the organization, how hard was it to be patient through all this?
Actually, it was quite easy to be patient. There was there was an opportunity for me to step away and spend some time in a neutral environment, which gave me the opportunity to first of all decide where I needed to go with my career, and I really felt the passion to get back into head coaching, and was not sure where the opportunity would arise. And when Edmonton made the decision to not renew Tom Rennie's contract, who is a good friend and who had been a good partner through the 2 years, I saw a door opening, and when the call came, I was excited. I was ready, and the time was actually good for me, to tell you the truth. To step into it this way was fair, and the process was strong.
Ralph, how does a person know when they're ready to be a head coach in the NHL?
I believe the most important thing when you're coaching in the National Hockey League is to feel confident about all the different components you need to deal with this level, whether it's the off ice work on the media or dealing with the complexities of the professional athletes of today and enjoying those challenges. And the hockey technical skill is one thing, but I believe it's being able to create an atmosphere where the players can perform to the best of their ability, where this unbelievable skill set can present itself within a team structure. That takes some time to develop as a coach before you're comfortable with those challenges. And I truly feel that, and am excited about the opportunity.
How are you a different coach now than when you came from Switzerland?
Well, you need to understand the pace of the National Hockey League, for one. I did many world tournaments, 12, and the Olympics, 3, where within a 17-day period, we would have the pace of what the National Hockey League has for 82 games. So it's understanding the pace, understanding the balance that's necessary to perform, the information flow. How much can the players handle with that schedule and that travel pace to perform properly, and so you don't block them or handcuff them on the way. All those things needed to be, I needed to understand, and the 2 years have given me the time to see what's important to the players, to the team, and how we're going to bring this forward in a successful way.
A couple of times this season for the Oilers, you ended up becoming the head coach. Tom Rennie's father passed away,
correct,
and then he ended up being concussed on another occasion. Did that whet your appetite?
It didn't really. I mean, I have so much head coaching experience, and I actually felt for Tom and his
I know,
problems.
Yeah.
So I did definitely get to taste the opportunity to head coach. It whetted my appetite to be a head coach again, and once again, not necessarily here. And it was an opportunity to go through the process. And and when we finally won a couple of games at the end of that stint, was important for also my comfort zone going forward. So yes, it was you could call it an appetite whetting opportunity, but more than anything, it was an experience that's helped me prepare for this. Yes,
as a guy who was doing the intermissions of those games, my one observation was that you tended to play the kids a lot more than Tom would just rotate lines. Is that fair?
I really feel that the kids were the leaders as far as their work ethic was concerned, and I'm not a coach that really puts a lot of value on what age you are. It's how hard you work and how passionate you are about what you do, and that's the beauty of the kids here. They really are passionate players who bring an amazing work ethic to the day, and that's what I was rewarding, and that's what I will reward going forward as a head coach is not necessarily seniority or any type of given opportunity. You have to earn it on a daily basis, and so the kids did fall into more ice time, and it worked, and we won some games. So this is something I hope to see going forward.
With Ralph Krueger, the new head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, Ralph, you talk about the kids, guys like Taylor Hall and Everly and guys like that. I mean, you well know, I don't think anybody needs to tell you, this team has been young and promising for a while. It's going to be young and promising again for a couple of years, but I mean, I think fans want to see it be young and promising and in the playoffs at some point soon as well. What can you bring as a coach that will help those young guys cash in on some of that potential and take this team to the playoffs?
Well, a lot of things needed to happen the last 2 years that have already been done, and now I believe with the maturing group that we have, there's an opportunity to add some solid team defense to the whole structure, meaning not to handcuff the players as far as the way they play or to limit their instincts or offense, but to really understand the game without the puck a little better as a group and to be more consistent. Also, to learn to close out games. We had many games last year that were tied, or we were leading going into the third period where we ended up with 0 points, and to get those 10 extra wins we need to make the playoffs, it's dealing with the management of the score and finishing games as a group. Those are a couple of components that I think we'll be working on early in the season.
Okay, you've been coached for 6 hours now. is Nail Yakupov going to be on that roster?
Nail Yakupov I actually watched him live for the first time here in our development camp right after my press conference, and that's an amazing skill set there. I'll tell you, it doesn't take a genius to see that he is a dynamic player. He drives extremely aggressiveness to the net, and even in this practice we had today, he was trying to score on every opportunity. So he will press hard, but nothing will be guaranteed for him. Just like Nugent Hopkins last year earned his spot in training camp, Nail will have to go through that process too.
And Ralph, with your international experience, one might suggest that it would be important to have another Russian on this roster so Yakupov could have a confidant, someone he could trust. Is that a logical assumption?
I've actually experienced a lot of Russian players in the past. I've actually played with them too, and the new player from Russia is much more open-minded, and there's more similarities there to Canadians than you might believe. There's a certain healthy swagger that they bring with them, and I don't think for Nail it's going to be that important who he's playing with. He wants to have players playing with him that match his skill set, that will share the puck with him, because he is not just a goal scorer, he's a great playmaker, but we have those players, we have those people, and I don't think he's going to matter so much. And you can tell in his interviews that he's been westernized quite well here in the last few years, and will certainly continue to do so.
Ralph, how much of what you do as a coach was influenced by your experience playing internationally, and more importantly, coaching internationally?
Well, coaching, it's really developed over, I was educating myself, and it's kind of a cute anecdote because I was educating myself to make sure I had a job after I played, and I didn't expect to be a coach. So I spent a lot of time in the hotel business as a player in the off seasons, and even got into that business for a while before I became a coach. So there was a lot of growth in going into the real business world, and the beauty of the national teams is that you change your roster on pretty well every camp that we have, and we had multiple camps in Europe. So it was like doing permanent experiments on the group dynamics, teams, practices, systems of play, and then you would always narrow things down as you hit the big world tournaments or Olympics. But it was like I was in a laboratory for 13 years, to tell you the truth. And so that experience, I wouldn't consider myself a European coach. I'd consider myself an international experienced or educated coach. But more than anything, I was able to study the game and spend a lot of time watching other systems and methods of training. And all of these have come together now, and I hope to bring them into the Oilers and create the winning culture that everybody here dreams of.
I spent a lot of time in the early 80s in Calgary, Ralph, watching the Wranglers play. It was after you left,
okay.
But I did get to know Doug Sauter,
okay.
who in my mind is one of the great characters of hockey, period, no matter what
yes,
country, no matter what.
Mustache in hockey.
And at that point had one of the greatest dogs, too. Had a big Great Dane that walked
great
around.
Dane.
The Great Dane used to walk around the corral all the time.
Yeah.
What would a guy like Doug Sauter think of you getting this job today? Because he's a lifer, you're a lifer, and it's an amazing story.
He'll be touched. He's the color commentary actually for Oak City, our minor league team, and I ran into him once last year when I got to jump down and watch the team. So he will be more than pleased that this has happened, because truly, there's different ways into head coaching jobs in the National Hockey League. I've taken the long, hard, patient route of just trying to improve every day, find ways to make my players and teams better, and myself as a coach, and that it's paid off is a nice story, and everybody who's been a part of that on the way. And Doug was my coach and junior with the Wranglers. Will be very excited, along with a lot of the hockey people I've grown with as I've gone through all my different stops.
Ralph, listen, we appreciate you joining us today. Best of luck in your role as head coach of the Oilers, and I guess the hotel business is lost as the Edmonton Oilers gain.
Thanks so much for the call, and I wish all the hockey fans on your network that on Primetime Sports have a good summer, and hopefully they enjoy the new version of the Edmonton Oilers coming up next season.
Take care, Ralph.
Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
That is Ralph Krueger. He is the new head coach of the Edmonton Oilers. Interesting guy. The hotel business.
We had to have something to fall back on.
Yeah, but you know, he made an interesting point. I mean, I remember Dave King talking one time about how one of the things international coaches have a lot of experience with is changing rosters, and especially right. When you're coaching a national team. And the Swiss national team, I was going to say, I'm not going to call them a second-tier national team.
Because not anymore.
But, you know, as Ralph Krueger said, I mean, it was like being in a laboratory. You could try stuff. You had new groups of players every time in camp, and you could try stuff and see what worked and what didn't work.
Make no mistake about the role of professional hockey, though, in Switzerland. It is a big sport. I mean, one of my favorite hockey tournaments is in Davos every year, the Spengler Cup, which brings professional hockey players from all over Europe, including a team of expat Canadians that play under the Maple Leaf. There's a lot of pressure and a lot of learning that he goes through in coaching at that level. And for him to stay there as long as he did and then ingratiate himself to the Swiss to become the head coach. By the way, Sean Simpson's he's another Canadian. He's the head coach that replaced Krueger. He just got renewed.
Wasn't Peter Sullivan one of the first Canadians to go over there and play? And he stayed and coached for a while, did he not?
Well, he did. But, this goes back to when you and I were in high school. Dennis DuPerry went.
Okay.
The old Maple Leaf went to play in Switzerland, and I was going to say in the mid to late 70s. But the quality of hockey's improved. And on the international level, a lot of it has to do with what Ralph Krueger did with the national program. So it was interesting to see that he said 2 years, I needed to come back and learn the pace and the different pace. I mean, it's one thing to do it for 17 days at a world championship or at an Olympics, but to figure out how to do it for 82 games, that's another challenge.
Is this, to your way of thinking, is it a surprise hire in that I think a lot of people looked at the Oilers and think that, you know, they're just, They're sort of on the cusp. Maybe you wanted a guy like Sutter to maybe get him over there. Does it surprise you a little bit that they would go this route?
It did surprise me when his name surfaced so quickly and on the list. And let's face it, it was in my mind from the time that Tom was not renewed, when Ralph's name came up and Todd Nelson's name came up and Brent Sutter's name came up. And there were so many people that said, well, it's Sutter's to turn down, blah, blah.
Right, especially with all
the World Championship. Yeah, and in many ways, it certainly sounds like it was down to Ralph or Todd Nelson in the end, who coaches their minor league team in the American League in Oklahoma City. I do know that Nelson was told yesterday that it was a very close decision. In my mind, I have to admit my loyalty. I Tom Rennie's a friend of mine, and you sometimes have to watch what you say and how you say it. I don't fully understand how you can get rid of one coach and bring in one of his assistants to do a similar style job, both with huge international experience, professional experience. I wish Ralph the best. I hope the Oilers are successful, but somewhere in the back of my heart, I feel for Tom Rennie because he's saying, "Well, I could still do that." And obviously, Daryl Cates and Steve Tambellini and Kevin Lowe thought he couldn't, and thought Krueger could do it. And it'll be an interesting time for the next 5 or 6 months in Edmonton.
You know, and one of the things I thought of originally as well, the whole idea of having a different voice in there, but that really doesn't hold in this regard anyhow. If he was an assistant coach,
Yeah, that's right. Now, the other thing of part of the Oilers' chemistry is that the return of Craig McTavish, who the former head coach of the club, coming back as a senior VP of hockey operations. So he will be there as someone that Ralph can talk to and Tambellini can talk to. So I'm happy for Craig to be back in the organization. He's a good man. But it will also, if this team does get off to a poor start, how quickly will the buzzards be out calling for Craig McTavish to return behind the bench? And some most of the time that's not fair. But you know that when someone of McTavish's ilk is in the organization, there will be people asking that question if this team gets to has a miserable October, November.
Yeah.
That's if we're playing hockey in October and November.
Yeah. And I've got to think that, I mean, it would be an obvious and in some ways logical question to ask. The top of the hour, we'll find out. We'll get Louis-Jean, get his reaction to whether or not we'll be playing hockey.
Well, he spent the last 2 days in Chicago, right?
Yeah. We'll talk to him about the NHLPA. They had their executive committee meeting, and Donald Fehr had some things to say the last couple of days. But when we return, Arash Madani was with the Toronto Blue Jays in Boston for this three-game series, and we'll pick over the carcass of the Toronto Blue Jays after this afternoon's I don't even know how you'd begin to describe
debacle it. It's a debacle.
Yeah, after this afternoon's debacle in Boston, Arash Madani will join us when primetime sports continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Sportsnet tonight. Tonight at 10. Now more of what you want to hear on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We are back with Primetime Sports. So we're watching the spot kicks here, the penalty kicks. Spain and Portugal. Spain wins Portugal. Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't even get to kick the ball. This is like Mark Crawford not putting Gretzky out.
This will be the story of this game, is that Cristiano Ronaldo did not kick the ball in penalty kicks.
That's outrageous. That is outrageously stupid.
At 3-2 for Spain, the Portuguese kicker hit the crossbar, and then all Spain had to do was score their final kick.
And Cesc Fabregas steps up and scores. Wow.
And Ronaldo does not even get a chance to kick the ball. That will be the story. I can see the headline in the Lisbon Daily News.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now.
Ouch.
I don't know, man. Paul Mariner may be in trouble. Toronto FC may have a new coach, right? Portuguese coach. That's probably the only place he's going to be able to coach after this. Wow. Arash Madani, speaking of debacles, not that Arash Madani is a debacle by any stretch of the imagination.
Don't you pick on my pal, Arash.
I was going to say, although maybe around 10, 11 o'clock tonight, he might be a debacle. But right now, he's not a debacle. He is our man on the scene at Fenway Park. And Arash, I know that you were there today. You know, are there still little bits of wing and everything lying around and, you know, Blue Jays feathers? Because I got to tell you, I mean, that was just awful. That was awful to watch.
Yeah, and Ricky Romero, Jeff, he didn't mince words at all. He said it was embarrassing. He was embarrassed at himself. And he flat said it was a poor performance. And here's the guy who's talked about everything's been a battle for him. Everything's been a grind over his last six or seven starts. And it was almost as if this was a ticking time bomb this afternoon. They were waiting for the bottom to kind of fall out, and nothing worked for Ricky right off the hop. And in the first inning, before you knew it, you know, the Red Sox had put five runs on the board, and you're saying to yourself, what just happened?
That's great, but does he have any freaking clue what is going on?
He doesn't, and that's kind of the bit of the scary part. And he told us after the game that he's just going to let tonight simmer, and then starting tomorrow, he's going to sit down with Bruce Walton and Pete Hunter, the pitching and bullpen coach of the Blue Jays, and they're going to sit down and break down tape and try and see what's wrong. One thing John Farrell talked about after the game is that he thinks that Romero's release point isn't where it should be, where it needs to be, and that it's not necessarily a mechanical thing, but that once it starts kind of getting into his head, he's getting off rhythm altogether. So they're going to go into the lab and they're going to go back to the drawing board and try and figure out what this mess is all about.
I mean, at one point, Arash, he was like at 48% of strikes, which you have to be around that 70 to 75% in strike situation. He couldn't even get the ball across the plate.
Yeah, John. I mean, he finished with 90 pitches with 42 balls. Wow. And I think that's got to be a record for Ricky since he became the number one guy in the rotation. And so, you know, that's going to be the story that's going to follow him. But look, Romero came into this game at 8-1, but as I was saying earlier, he didn't, you know, he's struggled this season. He doesn't feel like he's an 8-1 pitcher. He said, yeah, we're getting the wins, but it's not because of me. I'm getting good run support. So that was as visibly rattled as I've seen Ricky over the last 3 years. And that was just, you know, a few minutes ago.
Okay, the only positive today was the fact that Jose Bautista hit a baseball out of Fenway, and the guys at the Collision Center right now getting the dent out of the fender, right?
Yeah, exactly. Bautista's just been on a tear. I mean, the fact that that's 25 after the April he had is remarkable. And he basically has said and reiterated that he's just gone back to what worked for him in 2010. And yesterday I was standing and speaking with him, and he almost diagrammed home plate and started with his finger in the dirt, drawing exactly what he's doing, what he's thinking. And he said, look, it goes back to what Dwayne Murphy and Cito told me a couple of years ago, get started early. And it's not a different leg kick. It all has to do with timing. And he's gone back to that after the struggles he had in April.
Arash, how is John Farrell handling and taking all the stuff that's happened with the pitching? Because, I mean, this is a guy who was a pitching, you know, minor. Right. He's a pitcher. He's a minor league pitching coordinator. He was the Red Sox pitching coach. I mean, we know all this, but how is he handling this personally? Because I think I know him well enough to know that there is a large part of him that thinks this reflects on him personally.
Well, not only Farrell, but Bruce Walton, their pitching coach, a visitor came into the clubhouse and he introduced himself to the visitor this morning as the doctor, the team doctor, because that's all he's been dealing with, his medical reports. Farrell's such a type A guy too, Jeff, where he has a plan, and yes, he's able to modify from it, but he wants to stick to it. That, you know, this has just floored him. He admits he's seen nothing like this before, and he has said it's been patchwork along the way. Farrell doesn't show his cards all that often. He really, you know, holds them close to the vest. But the one thing that has been clear is that after Alvarez left the game the other night, and they were confident it wasn't anything serious, he kind of gave us a look of what's the next thing that's going to happen. Now, the good news for the Blue Jays is that they know at least for the next few days how things are going to go. Brett Cecil tomorrow. They're going to go with Carlos Villanueva Friday. And then Alvarez is still scheduled to go Saturday and Lappe Sunday. They have a little bit of relief in that Lappe pitched well yesterday. But Farrell really seems rattled by what's gone on, even though he's putting on a brave face publicly.
Do you expect Villanueva to pitch more than just the once, Rash? Do you think he'll be around for a while?
We asked him this morning. He said he went into the office. They told him, get ready for Friday, and he said, okay, and he walked out. And that's all he knew was Friday, John. But Farrell told us that their hope is that he can go for at least a few more starts. I almost think they want to see if they can get away with getting to the All-Star break and then reassessing there. And if they can get a couple of decent starts out of Villanueva, having, you know, a pitch count around 70 or 80, and Carlos over the offseason did modify his training program to get himself in starting pitching shape, then that might be okay to get themselves to a benchmark and then decide in mid-July what they want to do from there.
And Arash, I mean, as you well know, and I've made this point a couple of times, I mean, he saved their bacon at the start of last year as a starting pitcher. And I mean, I've got to tell you, based on what I've seen in the last week, I got a hell of a lot more confidence in Carlos Villanueva giving me six innings than I do anybody else in the staff, including Ricky Romero right now.
And that's almost the scary part.
It is scary.
You know, because Romero's your ace. And he just hasn't been performing that way. Now, this all said, amazingly, through the injuries and through the inconsistencies in their arms, they're still a team that's above 500.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, obviously there's still the meat of the schedule left. They still haven't been to Yankee Stadium. They still have to come back here, on and on and on. But what they're asking for right now, for instance, are for guys, Cecil, Laffey, Villanueva, to emerge and perform. And these are guys who are not even, you know, as part of the rotation leaving spring training. Laffey and Cecil were two guys who were the, you know, cuts on the final day of spring training, Laffy to Vegas, Cecil to Double A, and now they've become, you know, their two most reliable starters over the last 2 weeks. It's been rather remarkable.
On the other side of the scorecard, the Red Sox have now won 7 of 9 at home. Are they starting to feel that they're contenders again?
Yeah, I was speaking with David Ortiz yesterday, John, and he said, look, we're getting by, and we're doing it with so many of our regulars in the lineup on the DL. Amazingly, the Red Sox, and we talk about the Blue Jays and their injuries, but their rotation has taken a massive hit. On top of that, they've lost over 800 man games due to injury. And that's taken such a toll, and obviously it would on any team. They still feel with what they have right now that they can contend not just for that last wild card spot, but for a legitimate wild card spot. So, you know, they look at their disabled list woes and say, hey, we're on the right track once these guys get back. And they've been able, you know, they got a decent outing out of Daisuke Matsuzaka, which, you know, when's the last time we've heard anybody say anything too positive about a start from Daisuke?
With Arash Madani of Sportsnet on Primetime Sports. In your conversation with David Ortiz, did you get a sense that he said what he had to say to the Boston media and that, you know, the pages flipped and it's you know, just we're good to go again as far as he's concerned?
Yeah, he said, look, I just tried to diminish the noise. And I wanted everybody to shut up. I wanted to stop the excuses. I wanted everybody to come to the ballpark and just be talking about baseball and us as a team realize that no one's going to give us any free bases. No one's going to give us any free passes. No one's going to give us anything. We have to go get it ourselves. And he wanted to take it upon himself. It's been such a bizarre couple of weeks, guys, when you think about it. You know, Ortiz is the last guy left of that 04 World Series team with Kevin Youkilis gone. And Cody Ross likened the Youkilis departure, because everybody knew it was coming, to the death of a grandparent. You knew it was coming. You were just waiting for that shoe to fall, and that's what it felt in the Red Sox clubhouse. It seems there's a renewed vigor in there now, because they realize as they look around, this is the group we're going to have to do it with, and this is how we move on.
Arash, we appreciate...
Hold on. Here's the most important question. Boylston or Commonwealth tonight?
You know what, John? There's a new Del Frisco's right beside the hotel.
Attaboy. Attaboy, Arash.
Won't be the same without you, pal.
Take care, Arash.
Thanks, Jeff.
I don't believe him. He's going to end up in Boylston.
Boylston. I'm a Boylston guy.
Yeah, well, I'm a Commonwealth guy, but he'll end up in Boylston. That's my sense. Knowing Arash, Del Frisco's...
Nobody loves traveling more than Arash Madani.
No. That is true.
He just loves the... and he just plays it to the max.
He does, and he has a tremendous knowledge of outdoor bars. That's probably the best way to put it. We had martinis on a roof in Philadelphia at 3 a.m. one time. And well, think of that. Martinis, roof, Philadelphia, 3 a.m. You knew right away that Arash was part of it.
I'd be going for the cheesesteak at 3 a.m.
Yeah. That's well, yeah, it was cheesy, but it wasn't a cheesesteak.
Good for Arash.
Yeah. We appreciate Arash Madani joining us. The Blue Jays start a 4-game... Actually, I think they're home for 8 games. They got 4 games against the Angels and then 4 against Kansas City, I believe. And 4 against the Angels is...
I was going to say, because that guy they got from St. Louis...
Yeah, the Pujols.
He's starting to hit.
Yeah.
They're playing well.
Yeah, you may want to go out to the Rogers Center for batting practice at some point in the next 4 days. Back with more Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet.
Brady and Lang in the morning. Tomorrow morning, 5:30 to 9. Now more great sports talk on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
You're as cold as ice. We are back with Primetime Sports for Wednesday, June 27th, 2012. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan. Sean Shannon, my co-host. Trying to get Sid Sixero to come on and talk about Portugal's loss in penalties to Spain.
You like to see people just like
No. I just think it would be interesting to get Sid's take. Well, but,
again, the key thing for me, it's a simple. I don't follow the sport as much as you do, but how Ronaldo doesn't take a kick is beyond me. Beyond me.
Well, you know, I mean, I keep thinking back. We made a joke about the Olympics.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Gretzky not getting on. Yeah, you've got. Here's my thing. I understand there can be reasons for stuff, but you know what? Yeah, you got to have your best guy.
Yeah,
got to have your best guy out there.
Well,
and he's got to. You can't always plan for tomorrow because it might rain, right? You know, it's. I don't know. It was remarkable. It'll.
Well, as I said, the headlines in Lisbon tomorrow will be simple and effective. And, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo will be, I wonder, will he lead the charge? Will he be saying I should have kicked? Is he an outspoken guy?
Yeah. There's a shot of him on TV. I wish to hell I could read, I understood Portuguese because there was a great shot of him. And I'm sure he wasn't saying...
It's comparable to Wayne sitting on the bench by himself.
I'm sure he wasn't saying, God, I love Warsaw. I'm sure he wasn't saying that. If that's where they were. Anyhow, Portugal's out, so Spain will advance now to play Germany. And,
Hold on. Italy's...
I forgot, yeah.
Okay. Come on, you're not waving the German flag already, are you?
That. Spain will advance to...
play their winner.
Yeah, they'll either play... Or if Germany's just bored, Italy will probably win. But anyhow... Spain will be in there. Louis Jean of Sportsnet. We got to talk to Louis about the NHLPA meetings that were on in Chicago. I find it interesting, John. Hey, I've covered Donald Fehr through, I don't even know how many labor situations, 5, 6. And I was making a point to someone earlier. There are so many similarities to what he's doing right now, what he's done right now, to what he did in the past couple of baseball labor stoppages, just right. the organized news conferences and I wonder, you know Gary much better than I do. I'm interested in how you think Gary Bettman will respond if he has to get into not a public relations war, but if he has to get into a situation where he has to balance the media information that's going to come out. Because Donald's a lot more open than he used to be. How is Gary going to react to that?
Interesting you asked that. In looking at things last night at home and trying to figure out what's going to be the mm-hmm. next step, and then hearing rumblings that they would meet on Friday in New York, I sent a simple email to some friends in high places within the league office, and they said, sorry, can't help you. Secret. And normally there's a pretty good dialogue, and you can ask questions, and yes, we are meeting, or no, we're not. Or the league is trying to do this really low-key, and I do think that's mutual. I think there's a mutual understanding between both sides to say, listen, if we can talk, if we can do this without cameras and without microphones around every which way, and whether we don't confirm times and confirm cities, that maybe we can get some progress without the rhetoric,
right,
and without the media reports, then there's a chance that this thing will get solved. Now, pure and simple, the players are really quite happy with status quo. Pure and simple, the league and the owners are very unhappy with status quo. And whether it's revenue sharing, 57%, length of contracts, there are three or four major issues that will put us into a situation in September that says that we may not have hockey. But at this point, both sides are trying to play it down and trying to create a constructive bit of communication without any of us being around, and I credit Fehr for that.
Yeah, because I think he did a lot of that this off season, or I'm sorry, this season.
Absolutely.
He did a lot of, he was not, I mean, he picked his spots during the season. He pretty much gave a big interview to just about every national media outlet.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's been very accessible.
He's been accessible, but it's been accessible without saber rattling. People talked about the schedule as being a flashpoint. Well, that was more.
You mean the realignment?
The realignment. Yeah. That was more, and Donald will tell you this. That was more a dissatisfaction with the process,
correct?
Than it was with the end result. Correct. It was dissatisfaction with the fact that the players didn't feel they had enough input. But I don't think that was a marker. People said, "Well, that's Donald Fear thrown down." No, I think he would have done that even if they didn't have a CBA negotiation this year. They still would have done it that way.
Well, I think from his perspective, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, I mean, he did understand what the collective bargaining agreement said, and it did say the players would have input in that very situation in realignment. Though, therefore, when you're changing the playing schedule, then the players either have to be involved or they're not.
Yeah.
I see a lot of what happened in baseball the last couple of times coming through.
Which is good, because they got an agreement the last couple of times without... And the other thing too, and I'm going to ask you to correct me if I'm wrong here, but one of the things Donald Fear did do is basically any player can attend any of the bargaining sessions.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a player, you can walk in. Did Bob do that, or did he have his group? That
no,
he
there was it was a hardcore group of guys that in the executive that he dealt with. I also think that the league is trying to learn from what went right and wrong in 2004.
Yeah.
And it was much more personal, much more vicious between two people.
Yeah.
I think this is a situation between Don Fear and Gary Bettman where they're two very, very intelligent guys and they need to do something for the betterment of the game, you know, come hell or high water.
Yeah, I'm not certain there's as much animosity between the two.
Well, I don't think there is. I don't think there is.
Louis Jean of Sportsnet will join us. We'll talk about the NHLPA meetings in Chicago. When the network joins us, this is Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And a lovely high definition on Sportsnet.